we, in this day and time, we know so much about everyone else, but we know so little about ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's taking that time to hear your thoughts, because I think in a way people feel afraid. What if I like that and I love it and I do it and I fail? What if it doesn't work out? You can't think like that. All you have to think is, if you enjoy it, do it.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
We want to debate, investigate, and entertain.
Join us as we challenge the human experience
by speaking to people who impact the world through art.
Chapter 2, Podcast 4, Ali Kadim.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Lauren Bailey.
And I'm Nick Kane.
And welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
We would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present, on which this podcast recording today takes place.
And, of course, we are miles and miles away from each other.
Yes. This podcast recording is happening in a few different countries right now, Lauren Bailey.
How are things in Sydney?
Things in Sydney are great, Lauren, but I am more interested, how are things in hip-hop happening LA?
Yeah, things are going very well. It's been a big month for me. The month has seen me finish one theatre show and start rehearsing the next.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I've started rehearsals for Cuckoo.
Yes.
And I've just taken a little piece out of that rehearsal puzzle to come over here to LA for an all too brief trip, which has been really inspiring and exciting and given me a lot to think about.
What have you done while you've been over there?
Well, among other meetings, I have managed to catch up with Chapter 1, Podcast 26, storytelling guest Elka Berry.
The lovely Elka.
Who in between her auditions, which she is very busy doing, and her job as talent acquisition specialist for D'Alessio Law Group over here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've also managed to catch up with Trev, AJ and Jasmine from the Inside Acting podcast, which was really exciting. And for anyone who wants to know more about the creative journey of living and working as an actor in LA or anywhere really, I definitely recommend tuning into their great weekly podcast. How has your month been?
Gee, well, where do I start? Hey, one of the things that I think I ended last month's podcast on was around this idea of less talk, more action. If you remember correctly, I was feeling a bit guilty that I was talking about going and writing this comedy show a few podcasts ago and then nothing ever happened. Well, yep. I am happy to report that I went into the bush and I wrote a comedy show.
You went to the bush. Oh, you wrote the whole show. It's done.
Yeah, no. Honestly, I went to the foothills of the Blue Mountain. I rented a little studio just out of a place called Kurrajong, which is a beautiful little spot. I had a wonderful little host from Airbnb called Rosie. She was a painter. She was beautiful. Aww. And she totally got what I was trying to do, which was just shut up shop and find some focus.
Yeah.
In the end, it was only 24 hours because I had 2 days planned, but I actually had an audition back in Sydney and I was like, well,
oh, fantastic.
I do want to go to that.
That's a good reason. Yep.
Yeah, correct. It's a great reason. But I ended up pouring out 10,000 words.
Oh my goodness.
Now, I'm not saying it's like completely tight, ready to rock and roll, but what I was trying to focus on with the process was a really conscious effort not to judge or self-edit before it actually got anything on the page.
Yeah, fantastic.
Because that tends to happen to me, right? You go, oh, that isn't good
enough. I think it happens
to
a lot of people in your defense.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I mean, does it happen for you, Lauren Bailey? Do you find that when you're writing, or are you quite comfortable to just get it out on the page and edit later?
Absolutely. I mean, it's different for different projects, and I think that indicates how ready you are to really share something with the world. Mm. If you can just, once you write, just keep writing.
Mm.
Whereas other times that inner critic voice is so present, it can be hard to let that just flow. So it's really exciting to hear that that's just come out for you.
Yeah. And I think when I was driving back from the studio, there was this real sense of pride that I actually got. I remember being in the car and just going, how cool is that? You've been saying that for ages, that you're going to write a show, and you've actually gone and done it. So there was this sense of it was a stepping stone.
Does it have a, have we got a name for the show?
It does. It's a working title right now, and
I mean,
don't really want to share it. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit precious on that. So watch this space.
It's really funny. While I've been over here, I have actually, in two conversations with people where they've talked about needing to just get away to work on a particular area of a project, and I brought you up as an example in both those scenarios. So you can feel proud, buddy.
Great.
I said, well, Nick's in the wilderness, so if he can do it, you can.
Yeah. And I think, having said that too, Lauren, the less taught, more action thing, there is another project that's kind of bubbling away now that I've got a bit more time on my hands. And that's a project that is intrinsically linked to you. So there's this really wonderful sense with this film project as well, Lauren. I don't know if you're feeling this, but this synchronicity that's happening, the idea behind it really is, or the core issue behind it, the core concept, is something that's really personal, and I really believe it's one of these things. We talk to these artists who change the world through art. Well, I think this is really one of those projects. And I've been finding it's just sort of been all these little moments of synchronicity that's showing the universe, or the universe is showing us, that this is the right next project. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I do feel that. And having just said, when you sit down to write something and it's ready to come out, it does.
Yeah.
I feel like now that we've both decided that we want to work on this project, I know we've talked about this off the podcast, that people we speak to are immediately excited and want to offer information or add to the story that we're trying to craft. And it's clearly something that's present for other people. So in that way, I kind of feel like, on a large scale, the universe is ready for us to do this.
Yeah.
Having said which, I do obviously need to get back to Melbourne so we can get cracking on that. But yeah, it's very exciting.
It is exciting. And I mean, just before we jump into this interview with our wonderful guest, Ali Kadim, I did want to just touch back on your trip. What was the one highlight? Like, did you have something that was a moment that you could share with us?
The thing that I've been learning, and I kind of want to talk about this more on the other side because it's my takeaway from the interview with Ali.
Oh, okay.
But before I came here, as you pointed out, I do like to look ahead and go, okay, I'm going to pack a lot into my schedule.
Yeah.
And I couldn't necessarily lock in everything that I wanted to do over here before I left, which I like to do. So when I'm on the ground, things can just flow.
Yep.
But of course, I did land here and everything just kind of worked out.
Great.
And that's probably my biggest learning, and is something that I feel like I keep needing to relearn, to trust that things will work out. It's great to do the groundwork.
There's that universe working for you again.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, just before I left Australia, I was editing Ali's interview, and so I had all of that in my head while I was travelling, and I think he's so inspiring that that's been a really good thing to have to sort of steady me on my trip as well.
The podcast working wonders. Now we've talked about Ali, let's get stuck into hearing a little bit from the man himself.
Yeah.
Please enjoy the sounds of our interview with the parkour practitioner, the filmmaker, the movement specialist and the martial artist, Ali Kadim.
So here we are today with Ali Kadim.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast, Ali. You are a parkour practitioner, a filmmaker, a movement and martial artist.
Yep.
Did I say movement practitioer and martial
artist? Yeah, no, either. It's fine.
You started martial arts at 12 and parkour at 16 before going on to set up a school in southwest Sydney called Team Nine Lives that is dedicated to sharing the art of parkour. Before we get into just what an amazing individual you are, we thought we would start with your story.
All right, cool. Okay, so my story, I've always been interested in art. I see everything as art. I grew up drawing and reading comic books and was kind of obsessed with superheroes, so much so that I began learning different martial arts just so I could kick and punch like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
I then found parkour when I was 15 and began recording myself and my friends on a camcorder. And that's when I became completely obsessed with filmmaking. I've been lucky to have continued both ever since. When I made videos or performed, all I'd think about was trying to expand people's consciousness to get them to see and think about the world differently. Parkour in itself is like an impossibility to become strong and athletic using obstacles that people ignored on the streets completely. So it changed the way I saw the world. I would see
for example, so many people around me hating their jobs, hating their lives, coming home angry. And that inspired me to never want to be like them. And I did everything I could to pursue what made me most happy.
Thanks for sharing your story. I've been waiting for this moment for a while, Ali.
Oh,
like,
thank
I've known you for few years now, and I think I said this to you off air, that I said to Lauren, we've got to get Ali on the podcast at some point. So it's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
First thing I want to say, actually, there's a bit of news. This year you were awarded by the Australia Council for the Arts the prestigious Kirk Robson Award, which is super exciting. I mean, that recognises outstanding leadership in community arts and cultural development, and it's particularly in the areas of reconciliation and social justice. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, this is not just limited to, but it is in part linked to you creating Team Nine Lives,
mm-hmm.
And I guess what you do with Team Nine Lives and parkour.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about when you first decided to start Team Nine Lives and the school that I guess is attached to it as well, because you teach youth about parkour. Can you tell us a little bit about Team Nine Lives and what the significance it holds for you?
Sure.
And maybe a little explanation of exactly what parkour is.
Yeah.
All right.
For those uninitiated.
Yeah. Okay, no problem. So if you imagine ninjas on the street, you know, wearing day-to-day clothes, they'd be doing parkour. So
yeah.
I guess. So it's the art of moving from A to B, using your environment and using the obstacles to create movement. So that's what parkour essentially is.
Yeah.
And I started doing it because I couldn't afford equipment, because I was into skateboarding and that kind of thing. And I just couldn't afford the equipment to, you know, and the skate shoes and whatnot. Yeah, to pursue it like properly. And so I ended up stumbling across the documentary of parkour.
What was the documentary? Was there a particular one?
Oh, no, it was a segment on Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, fantastic.
And it was from the original French guys, the Yamakasi.
Yeah.
They still practice to this day, and they're still spreading parkour to this day as well. And when I saw that, it was like full steam ahead. I was like, I've been doing this, and now it has a name. So I started to pursue it and just training for fun. It was for fun, and it still is for fun. So for us, it was really just about using what we have, the limitations that we have in our environment, and to express ourselves. You know, we have energy. Young people have a lot of energy, and we got to put it somewhere. It's got to go somewhere. So why not use it in a way where it's going to make you better, at least in something? So for us, it came naturally, because our environment growing up in Fairfield, all we had was buildings and blocks and concrete and bricks and that kind of thing. So if we, for example, grew up near the beach, I'd probably be a surfer. Do you understand?
That was your environment. So
totally.
You used to,
so you're the product of your environment. And for us, we thought, why not just capitalize on it and use it instead of sitting and complaining and playing video games and whatnot.
And when did the school come about? Because obviously you were practicing parkour.
Right.
At what time did you go, rightio, this is going to be more than just, I guess, a hobby or a passion? It became a professional pursuit, really.
Yeah, it evolved over time. And all I wanted to do was just to get good and to share it with people, because I felt so good doing it, and I wanted other people to have the same kind of fun and not be alone when I get yelled at on the street.
because that's a real thing, right? Like, people are like, what are you up to? What are you doing?
A lot of the time, they're telling you to get down, you understand? So they'll see us climbing things, and they'll tell us, you know, hey, you, what are you, like, you know, get down from there. You're going to hurt yourself. Whereas now, it's just kind of like, they'll take out their mobile phone and they'll record us.
So it's changed.
Having watched your stunt reel, I can completely understand why they would record that. I'm tired from just looking at it.
Me too, don't worry.
And I know you say it was just something that you'd always been doing.
Yeah.
But obviously training is a really crucial part.
Very much.
Doing it safely.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we didn't take into account when I encouraged you to have a go at parkour on the way to the interview today,
it's
Nick.
Fair to say, it didn't go well. And I did actually say to you, Lauren, I said, let Ali teach us a few tricks. And you went, no, just have a go.
Yeah, right.
And you know what? Leave it to the professionals is what I would say.
Oh, you know, you'd be surprised. Everyone can do it.
This is true, right?
Well, you know, I think you've got to start somewhere.
You do, yeah. Yeah. Baby steps. It's all baby steps.
Yeah.
And we still run in Fairfield every week. We're still teaching and we're still moving around. And it's less like a school and it's more like a club. It's more of us, just a young bunch of guys and girls getting together every week and just for the love of the art and for the love of trying to get better.
And so it's a good point, and I think Lauren was starting to edge in on this. Discipline's so important in regards to training.
Yeah.
What does discipline mean to you?
It's just sticking to what you enjoy and committing to it, really.
There's actually a post, and this sticks in my mind, Ali, that you posted on Facebook around just doing a little bit each day. And look, the photo was you. You're a ripped gentleman, just saying. It was just a little bit each day. But it's like, that's what it is, isn't it? Like,
it is.
The dedication of, you might not feel like it day to day, but it's like, if you get out there and you do it every day, bit by bit, you're going to be better, right?
Big time. I mean, you look at an ocean and it's made of drops, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how we kind of think of it. It's like, you think of every single little bit, it adds up. It all amounts to something. But for example, we tend to think of things in the grand scheme of things and we look at the mountain, but we don't look at the steps it takes to get there.
Mm.
Do you understand? And we're looking at the big picture, but we're not looking down or in front of us and saying, well, if I take this step and then another one tomorrow, and then I'm going to be at the top and looking down and enjoying the view.
Enjoying the view.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic image.
Yeah, it is.
A thing that I find really interesting about parkour is the way that seems to be part of everything else that you're doing. Like, it's embedded within everything else. The filmmaking and the stunts that you do, those things are sort of more obvious. But I know recently you were doing some work with NIDA's physical theatre students, and a lot of actors are familiar with the technique of animal work for finding a character. But you were working with them to bring parkour and the animal work together. How did that all coalesce?
I had the chance to work with the head of movement at NIDA. His name's Gavin Robbins, a great gentleman. He's like a scientist when it comes to movement.
Yeah.
And we got the chance to tour around Dubai and Egypt doing shows together and that kind of thing. So he knew that I did parkour, and he invited me to come down to just run a couple of classes as an introduction to some of the actors there. And I think they were first year actors at the time.
Yeah.
And I came in and they loved it and we loved it, and it gelled really well. So I started going there on an ongoing basis, and running quite a few classes with the actors. And I was inspired at the time from watching Planet of the Apes. And for me, that was a big inspiration, because when you look at parkour, in essence, if you think of the animals that are the best at parkour, it would be primates and cats, and they climb really, really elegantly and really effortlessly. And when you see that, you think, well, if I can imitate that, then I'll be really good at parkour.
Yeah, right.
So I was drawn to that kind of side of it, and I started to explore that and research and watching animal documentaries and researching the behind the scenes of Planet of the Apes and how the movement choreographers dove into that world. And they themselves did lots of research and development. And then I took everything I learned, and then just whatever we could come up with, we workshopped it together. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was nice. And that was experimental sort of work with the students, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of really cool for first year to be able to do that. That usually comes in the later years, so I guess they would have been super stoked to.
Oh yeah, to be able to they were harassing Gavin to get me back.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah,
That's awesome. And so another part of your world of skills, I guess, late last year you brought your skills to the stage. You did a production called The Cartographer's Curse.
Yeah.
At Parramatta's Riverside Theatre. So to give a little bit of background, over 100 years ago, a British diplomat called Mark Sykes and a French counterpart, François, I hope I get this right, Georges Picot.
That's right.
said about drawing borders and dividing up the Middle East, basically to suit their respective interests.
Yeah.
The play examines some of the chaos, I guess, that came out of that, and the conflicts created by the boundary changes.
Mm-hmm.
And the production itself that you did was created by the newly established Arabic theatre company called Third Space Productions.
That's right.
So what sparked your involvement in that production?
Well,
two of the ladies that were working on the show, the director and co-director, Paul Aboud and Claudia Chidiak, I've worked with them in the past, and they invited me to come back onto this new show. I dropped everything and I said, I'd love to.
That's awesome.
I was like, I've only been waiting for this phone call since forever.
Glad you called.
Yeah. And she, in her crazy, wild creativity, she said she found a way to implement my parkour into the story, which my character played a young boy from the Middle East at that time. And he was using parkour as his way of navigating his city and of his way of escape and that kind of thing, because there was war and because there was poverty and that kind of thing. So that was his avenue. Mm. And we found a way to make it realistic in the way that 100 years ago, parkour still would have existed.
Existed, yeah.
It just wouldn't have a name. People would climb. People would have been hunting.
People wouldn't have been since Converse.
Yeah, they wouldn't be wearing, you know, Nikes or whatever. But they'd be moving to survive, and they'd be moving for a purpose.
Yep.
And so we took that kind of avenue with the storyline and gave him a name, gave the character a backstory, gave him a real kind of feeling. And my sister came on board as well and played my sister in the show.
How good.
She outshone me. She was crazy.
Always a wise.
Yeah, always, right? Yeah. And she's a poet in her day to day, and she plays kind of a poet in the story as well, and she acts and is
Yeah. So outshone you basically is what
yeah.
we do.
Yeah.
And how do you find parkour and acting for stage as opposed to film?
Yeah, it's tiring.
Yeah.
It's very tiring, yeah. Because when you're on stage for 1 hour, it's the 1 hour. You know what I mean? Yeah, you're moving and you're...
Says the man who climbs buildings.
Yeah.
And we're crossing where... So 1 minute there'd be dialogue and there'd be, you know, voice and that kind of thing and text. And then you'd have to do a movement piece, so... I did a lot of training to prepare myself for that. And you take the work seriously and then you'll be fine throughout the production. So.
And breath work too, I would have thought. Like when you're doing all these physical activities and then having to deliver lines.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, you just need to manage that, I imagine.
Yeah, for sure. We didn't have microphones and that kind of thing as well. So everything was, we had to project and learn to breathe. And luckily at that time I was working on my breath work. So it came as a good time for me to challenge myself. So
yeah, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Where does your filmmaking fit into the physical and creative pursuits? You have an amazing stunt reel.
Thank you.
Have all this kind of stuff that probably is born out of the fact that you do parkour. But then you're taking it a bit further now, right? With possibly some film work that you're looking to do.
Yeah.
Did I lead the horse? Led the horse a bit out of the water. But you do. Yeah. You have some film work.
No, it's going good. Yeah. It is. It's going good. And it's something that I've been doing for as long as I've been doing parkour, which has been the better part of 15 years. So people mostly know me because of my parkour work and my movement and that kind of stuff. But they don't know that I've been holding a camera, recording myself for that whole entire time and recording my friends and going out and shooting experimental videos. We make our own commercials. We started getting into music videos, and then we shot a whole bunch of short films as well. Documentaries. Then I got into some doing weddings and that sort of thing. And
we've heard a rumor that you're working on a feature screenplay at the moment. Is that right?
Yes. Where did you hear that?
We have our sources.
You guys have great sources.
We paid.
Seriously.
Drop that in.
Yeah, that's good information.
Excellent.
Yeah, it is. It is in the works. There is something in the works. So I've been writing for the past month, just a new idea. I've been writing for the past 2 years, actually, because I got injured from overtraining. And I thought to myself, I can't keep moving for the rest of my life. I need to really take the other parts of filmmaking more seriously. So I started, I bought a whole bunch of screenwriting books and learned everything that I could, and I started writing screenplays. So this one that I'm writing now, it's my seventh screenplay. It's about a Middle Eastern poet who is living in Sydney, and he's waiting for his fiance, his love, to arrive to Sydney because they've been separated by war-torn conflict.
that kind of, it's a romance drama, and it's something that most people probably didn't think that I would write, but that's something that sits very, very much in
I can see themes in there that relate specifically to your world as well. You know, obviously there's the movement side of things, the poetry from your sister, and whether that's sort of something that you obviously find a passion within, the refugee thing as well, in regards to possibly how you felt throughout your life, early days, coming from Thailand, and you was telling us stories about, you know, the world that you had over there as well. Do you feel like it's the personal experience, or do you feel like this is very much a imagination based type piece?
Yeah, it is. It's both. Yeah. So it's building on that world, when I grew up here, I did feel like there's a part of me that felt like I didn't belong. You understand? And it took me a long time to find myself and to feel like I have a reason to be here just as much as anyone else does. Yeah. So that took me some time, and I started to think about the themes of the film, for example, that explores purpose and life meaning and existentialism and that kind of thing. So I think these are very much at the core of what everyone thinks but doesn't think about. We all have that kind of instinctive longing for why are we here, or, you know, how did we get here? Those
abstract,
a lot of these questions. So I want to ask these questions in the film. I want to kind of explore that kind of philosophical sort of avenue, and just to get people kind of diving inwards into their subconscious and say, well, what is going on inside of me that I don't know about?
Do you
understand? So
I was just thinking about our podcast guest for Chapter 2, Podcast 2, Buddy Miller. He talks quite a bit about the great thing about being an artist is that we can search for something bigger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pursuit that we're actively invited to follow.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back with the interview shortly. Artist Toolkit time, and this month's topic is a personal ritual you use to prepare for the work.
And of course, it is just that idea of the things that you fall back on when you might have an audition the next day, or you're preparing for a rehearsal, or you're finding your way into a script, just how you access the work. We have a contribution from both of us.
Yes.
And we also have a contribution from Chum Ahelapala, who was, of course, the guest on last month's podcast.
Should I kick it off?
Yeah. Yes. What is your ritual, Nick?
I use music pretty heavily in researching and preparing for my acting work. Music, Lauren, is a really strong device for me, and it works on many different levels, whether it be emotional or mental. When I talk about that mental side of things, I'm talking about memory retention. I use the example of shooting a film, right? You almost never shoot in a linear fashion. Therefore, for me, it's really important to be able to access different points of the character's arc and the emotional journey really quickly. So, for example, Lauren, last year when I was shooting the feature After the End, I would prepare for each scene. I would choose a song that represents that scene for me, and I'd play it actually repeatedly while studying the scene, and it became a part of that scene. It just, through osmosis, became a part of that scene. And then the way that I'd use that is that I'd use that particular song directly before the scene was shot. And what actually happens through the magic of the brain, it starts to make these connections back to that time when you were researching and going through the early stages of understanding what the scene is.
Wow.
And I felt it was a really beneficial technique to really prepare myself quickly to get to the point that I needed to be for that particular scene. It's a handy little thing because you can do it while you're on set, right? A pair of headphones, your script, and the length of a song is all you need.
And music is a fantastic way to remember things, but without judging those memories, like even in our own lives.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Have you got a moment or a ritual that you can share with us?
Yeah, I guess I was looking at this slightly differently.
That's a beautiful thing.
But I was thinking about sort of my fallback things that I use to prepare for an audition or for rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And I did some Michael Chekhov training back in the early 2000s, which was the first thing that really clicked for me as a technique. Obviously, we learn lots of things and we pick something up from all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But these I use again and again. And it's just some basic exercises to fire up the imagination, get me in my body and allow me to feel open and ready to respond either to the reader or to other actors in rehearsal. And of course, the reason I love Chekhov's work is because it comes from the idea that the imagination is vast. So if we can imagine something, we can experience it, which is really in line with how I like to approach work.
Yeah, your beliefs. And I think you actually have introduced me to a few of these techniques over time working with you, Lauren. And
yes, I have.
You have. And I must admit, I still use a couple of these techniques because I found them really beneficial as well at that early stage of getting ready to do the work. So thank you for introducing me.
Well, and I should also credit Daniel Leglaire from the Chekhov Actors Training. Mm-hmm. And the techniques that I do are from Michael Chekhov's To the Actor, from the section The Actor's Body and Psychology. And, of course, it's his take on the exercises that I'm referring to.
You were just passing on the flame. I like it.
Yeah, that's a nice image. And, of course, the other thing I would do is voice exercises, both from the work I've done with Jennifer Innes here in Melbourne. Yes. There in Melbourne, and also from the Fitzmaurice practice, as I learned it from Buddy Miller in the Bali Taksu training. So those are my sort of rituals. And let's hear from Mr. Chama Helapala.
All right. So my ritual, the first thing I'll do is I'll just read that scene over. And I won't put much in it. If I have a natural instinct to say a line, because just as I hear it, I just do it. I will just allow myself. Just naturally. Doesn't mean it's what I'm going to do. And I just read the whole scene. And then at the end of it, I literally just sit there and start to see this person. I'm not thinking about acting technique. I'm not thinking about craft. I'm not thinking about turning points or beat changes or anything like that. I'm literally seeing who is this person in this scene as a human, as if I've walked in as a fly in the wall into this moment. And I'm watching the moment and I'm like, okay, that's the guy I'm meant to be. So without already orchestrating the guy and creating a mannequin, how do I just look at him as a human and study the guy first as a human? And then as I'm seeing, the first thing I see is his behavior. I don't see him talking. I see his behavior, the way he kind of sits, the way he kind of moves and stuff like that. And then I just naturally walk around my lounge room and I'm just trying to work the guy out in my body. And then sometimes I might say a line. You know, I'm holding the script in my hand. As I'm working the guy out, I'm like, yeah, that's how the guy feels. Yeah, I can see why he'd say that. I'm not thinking about how I'd say this line. I'm just kind of thinking about, who is this guy? And I keep going through the whole scene. And what I'm doing is, though, is I'm never kind of statically sitting there highlighting and memorizing. I'm just wondering. You know, if your body's static, you're fucked. Your body has to be moving because, like, that is what art is about, right? You have to move. And so I'm just moving and moving and moving. It's, you know, it's called action. Action doesn't mean you don't go standing by a talk. It's like action. I want to see action, you know? And so like I'm like, okay, where's the action in this guy? And so as I find the dude, I'm like, okay, I think I've found his skin. I've got, you know, like then I'll go, okay, now let me look at my lines. Now that I know the guy, what are the options available to him in communicating this scene? You know, when does he get angsty? When does he get intense? When does he get charming, you know, because now that I've found the guy, I can now play with his personality. And that becomes the rehearsal. Then when I go to the casting room, I'm like, who is he now in front of this person? Because I've explored his personalities. I'm like, oh, okay, right, he just turned intense. And that's the performance in the audition room. Because now I'm organic, you know, I can't orchestrate shit. And so now what happens is instead of me doing the perfect best version of what I've rehearsed, my eyes are alive. It may not be what I thought it was, but it's truthful. It's a personality. It's a human. All we do as actors is give humans life. No human walks around acting. They walk around living. And actors that can find life in characters. So my first thing is I find my body. Your body's where your life is. Your heart, your soul, your gut instinct, it's all in your body. Get out of your head. Get in your body. Once your body's alive, go to your head and have a little chat with it about some different possibilities and personalities and ideas. That's my process.
I know you talk a lot about fear and overcoming fear.
Uh-huh.
And in 2012, you did a talk for TEDx Parramatta, which was entitled Seeing Obstacles as Opportunities, Parkour Way of Life. And we'll definitely pop a link to this on the website. And in during the talk, the thing that stuck out for me is you tell the story of the first big obstacle that you overcame.
Right.
Climbing a four-story building. And that little thing. And the idea that obstacles are actually moments of opportunity, and that in parkour, these obstacles become your tool. Obstacles and our fear of them can stop us from doing all sorts of things in our lives. What do you believe is the first step towards seeing something as an opportunity instead of an obstacle?
Right. Oh, it's, yeah. Right. Yeah. It is big. It is big. I'm still trying to figure it out. I find, because, you know, as you know, we're all human. We're all human. We all deal with obstacles. We all deal with challenges, a million and one distractions every day, all of us. Regardless where you are in the world, everyone has their own issues and things to deal with. I find that if you think of obstacles instead of running away from them as an opportunity, that it makes you better, that you'll chase it. Do you understand? Yeah, so right. So a lot of people spend their time running from the obstacles, not realizing that it's the obstacles that makes them better.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. You have a path that's easy and you have a path that's difficult. On the path that's easy, you might not learn much, but on the path that's difficult, you're guaranteed to learn a lot. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
We definitely know what you're talking about.
You will learn a lot, and you will learn a lot about yourself. You'll learn a lot about the world. You'll learn a lot about your place in the world and your philosophy on it, and embracing limitation, because the limitations force you to have to be creative.
Yeah.
So you're exercising your brain. You're exercising parts of yourself that you probably haven't discovered yet. But you wouldn't get the chance or the opportunity to do that if you had just took the easy path, because it's easy, for example.
It's a bloody good answer. And look, you know, Lauren asked the really hard questions. I asked the really simple ones. But just really to touch on TEDx, sure. Right? Like, yeah. At the time when you did that,
right.
Did you have a good understanding of the breadth of TEDx? Like, that is on my bucket list.
Oh,
if
really?
I can
yeah,
find
right.
something to talk about at TEDx,
yeah.
I've made it, right? So the fact that you've done that is so huge.
Oh, I'm grateful. Yeah.
And so at the time, did the weight of the expectation hit you? Or was it more like, it's another speaking engagement?
It's easier than a four-story building.
Well, yeah, maybe.
It's much, much harder. I'm terrified of public speaking, and that was a big challenge for me at the time, and I prepared it at the last minute, but it was something that sat at the core of what I believed at the time.
Yeah.
Especially because I was going through a lot of stuff, and my family was going through a lot of stuff, and the people close to me, and I just kept seeing a real similarity between people's problems, that they were all having the same kind of problems and struggling to deal with it. So I just thought, why not impart a little bit of what I see, how I see these things. And I struggle with it as well myself. I'm not perfect, but the thing that always brings me back is how we are doing things out on the street that we're not meant to be doing, and we're doing it for free. And using obstacles that people completely ignore, and we're doing things that are almost like ballet, or it's almost like Olympic sports out on the streets, and we're using the environment in that way. So it's creating something out of nothing. And when you look at it like that, you just think, well, what else is possible?
But there's also this thing, I think, you know, you say it's like dance or anything like that, but if you fail at dance,
right,
what's the worst that could happen? But if you miss, do you know what I mean? Like the risk, the reward's huge, but the risk is also massive as well, right? Yeah. Like as a sport.
It is. And the thing that parkour teaches you is it teaches you to trust in your ability, to trust in yourself. So, for example, no one can do a jump for you. No. That's you. That's you completely. Your mind, your body, your spirit, you in your absolute physical realm, you have to take the jump. You have to make the decision in your mind. And once you take the jump, you have to realize at the same time that the more you commit to the jump, the less chance you have of stuffing it up. So if in your mind you have doubt, and if in your mind you say, I can't do it, if your mind, you can't jump and then halfway say, you know what, I'm gonna go back.
I'm not going to jump anymore.
I changed my mind. So it teaches you that. It teaches you you have commitment.
Yeah.
Do or die, all or nothing. And you take that philosophy, you take those principles, apply it to your life, and you say, what else can I do? And that's it's just a seed, and hopefully it spreads to other things. So
the idea of taking that jump, it just makes me feel faintly ill. But that's
Small jump.
In an article on the Creative New South Wales website, you recommend emerging practitioners to capture motivation by being very specific about what they love and then believing in their ability to do what they love to a higher level. For a lot of artists and young people in general, the battle can actually be identifying specifically what they love to begin with. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people who are trying to work out what direction they want to be heading in?
Think about what's the first thing that comes to your mind when your mind has time to think.
Where does it go?
Yeah. What are the things that interest you? What's the thing that, like, when you hear about it or when you see it or when you're engaged in it, that you're inside yourself, you feel like, man, I'm really enjoying this. Like, this is a lot of fun. If you know that, that's what you should be doing. It's that simple, but we complicate things that are simple. So
I love the simplicity of that. And I also love the statement where you said, when you have time to think about things, because I think we get caught up in bullshit so often. but you know what I mean? If we never stop to listen to what we actually
appreciate.
We get caught up in the madness of just doing.
Completely. In this day and time, we know so much about everyone else, but we know so little about ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's taking that time to hear your thoughts, because I think in a way people feel afraid. What if I like that and I love it and I do it and I fail? What if it doesn't work out? You can't think like that. All you have to think is, if you enjoy it, do it, because it makes you happy. Life is very short. If you spend your time doing things you hate, if you spend your time doing things that you absolutely resent, and you're begrudgingly getting out of bed every morning, then what's the point? What is the point? Do you understand? Yeah. Because we can't buy that happiness. We can't buy that enjoyment. It comes through something. Every single person has something they enjoy. There are people that love soccer, for example. There are people that love ballet. There are people that love drawing and every other art form under the sun, and sport and what have you. Everyone loves something. Mm. Everyone has something. Why were we given that love? Where did it come from? And if we were given it, then what are we going to do with it?
Wow.
So on that note, Daddy, have you got one more? I feel like you got one more question in you.
Yeah, I have. You're sitting there. You look so friendly and relaxed.
I'm friendly.
And you're this building climber who does these amazing motivational public speeches, and you've just won an award, and you do stunts, and you're making films, and you've written 7 screenplays, and you've got all the answers anyone has ever wanted to overcoming fear, and, you know, like, pretty much you're pretty sorted, let's face it. I just guess I'm curious if you can talk about a time anywhere in there where you feel like you have felt down or you have felt challenged in a way that you haven't been sure how to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
The hard times.
For sure.
And how you got through it.
Great question.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a tough question. There's been many times where I thought I wouldn't, do you understand, I wouldn't keep going. A lot of times where you think that you're going to quit. And that's a very human thing. Everyone goes through it. And as optimistic as I may be, and as life hits you, it hits you. And you fall on your ass and you're just sitting down, lying down, face up, looking at the stars and whatnot, seeing stars. And you just think, what the hell happened? And it's normal. For me, what kept me going is I don't know. Yeah. I just thought, I've come this far. Why should I give up? And if I enjoy it, I will die trying to do it.
Yeah.
That's for me, that was it. It was this one, I think. And I haven't really had the chance to fall back on any kind of job or qualification or anything like that. Mm. And everything that I had been pursuing for the past 15 years was always to get me to be doing what I love to do. It's like, and to make films and to keep moving and to just spread that awareness and to get other people to enjoy it at the same time. I don't know how I overcame those things, but I just thought life is too short to think negative. Do you understand?
Mm.
Every single day, you have 24 hours. You have 24 hours. I have 24 hours. It's the same for everybody. But what do we do with those 24 hours? We only have so much energy. We have to sleep. We have to eat. There's only so much time. What are you going to do with it? You can either sit and complain and say, my life is not going well, blah, 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 blah. We can always find something to complain about. Yeah. Or you just say, okay, these things are happening, but fuck it. You know, like, yeah. I'm just going to do what I have to do because these are the steps I need to take to get me to where I need to be. And that, just focus on that. Focus, like, completely all your energy. Yeah. Because the more you focus your energy on the good stuff, the more you're going to attract the good stuff. And when you're focused on the bad stuff, you attract the bad stuff. It's like when you see people that are down all the time, or they have a depressed nature about them, or that kind of personality, and they're always complaining about, oh, you know, these people treat me like this. And you say, but you're looking at them and you're thinking, well, you are treating people like that. Your outlook on the world is that the world is a grim and sad place, and that's what you're getting.
Yeah.
And it's multiplying.
So true. Yeah.
Completely. Mm. So they're, you know, misery loves company. You know what I mean? And they're in their own bubble, and they've perpetuated that kind of feeling for themselves. But the same is true for the opposite. If you have a positive outlook on life, you're going to attract the right people. You're going to attract the right opportunities, and they're going to come at the right time. And if they don't come, you make them. Mm.
What I love is just your razor sharp focus. Like, I just like, a lot of people are going to listen to this. Much
they're
like,
I'd be like, why are they sound obsessed?
Well, you know, as I said, I probably have sounded obsessed, mate. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, okay.
But people are going to listen to this, and I think you're exactly right. I think they're going to listen, and as you say, the opposite is true. By listening to you, I think you bring a little bit of joy to the listeners as well, and I think it's exactly why we do this podcast, man. To get out there, and hopefully it gives listeners just that little bit of, whether it be inspiration, positivity, whatever it might be, to go and make their art and make the world a better place. So right. I want to end the interview on saying thank you so much for your time. And, you know, we just so appreciate you being
a part of it.
Pleasure. Because,
thank you.
Hopefully you've made a little mark with this podcast as well.
Yeah, we only had 24 hours today, and I'm really glad that you were part of them.
Oh, thanks a lot. Same. I'm very glad to be here. Thank you.
Thanks, Ali.
Thank you.
Oh, running like a fool.
What was your take out, Lauren?
Okay, so I'm quite excited that you've asked me that particular question, Nick.
You knew it was coming. Come on.
But I have been quite excited. I mentioned that I was editing Ali's interview just before I came over here to LA. So I really had it in my head and in the weeks before I left. The thing that stuck out for me, obviously he said a lot of things that were really inspiring and motivating. And by the end of that interview, I was grinning from ear to ear. But the one thing that keeps coming up is this idea of working out what you love and what direction you should head in. And I asked Ali about that. Obviously, I know I have a clear idea of what I love doing, but his advice was to reflect on where your mind goes when you let it go, and combine that with when you're doing something that you find great joy in it, that those are real compass points for you. Mm. And although I know the work that I want to be doing as an actor and through writing as well and through the podcast and all of those things, you know, we all know that at times you doubt what you're doing or you lack motivation or you hesitate about a particular decision, or you might find yourself complaining about having to prepare for the work. And I kept coming back to this, going, this is the thing I think about. These are the things I love doing. And to be really grateful for them.
Yeah.
And so it has been like, if you imagine my journey on a GPS map, it's been like a little pinpoint for me.
Anchor
just
point,
reminding me that I'm heading in the right direction. So yeah, that has been a really practical, wonderful takeaway.
That's a wonderful point. I think you say that in the interview, that he really has his loves embedded in everything that he does. Like, it's really clear where his love lies, if that makes sense, in his passion lies.
Yeah.
And everything around that, he feels like he really knows the direction he's heading in. And that's because of what you're saying, really understanding those moments and what he really, truly enjoys.
And not needing to question that, you know, and going, okay, cool, I know that. I can use my energy for something else.
And that's okay, yeah.
What about you?
okay, what did I take out? So much. That guy. He is literally a living and breathing self-help book, isn't he? The way that he talks, I love it.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of points. The first one is we're really starting to find a through line with our slightly new direction. Obstacles as usable tools that help shape us. Chum spoke about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Ali's obstacles take a much more physical manifestation to help us understand the analogy. But I think there's this really wonderful thing about how we use our obstacles that keeps coming up every month.
Yeah.
But I think the main takeout from Ali was really around just his dedication, his small steps,
yeah,
his laser sharp focus, as you started to talk about, and his consistency. So he really put it quite eloquently when he said, the ocean is made up of many drops and it all amounts to something. I love that. And I can really relate that to my life right now. We're not always going to be in a place where we're feeling like we're on top of the world and successful or always in a state of flow. But if you can continue to just add and put those little drops into the ocean, that dedication and those small things really add up in the long term and help you achieve your greater goals.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have a couple of things to say to that. One is I almost felt like our interview with Ali was the answer to our interview with Chum.
Yes.
And the stuff that Chum said about how obstacles are our successes.
Yep.
And that Ali is both the physical and the mental representation
totally,
of that.
Totally. Yeah, it's fantastic.
But it's also interesting that you talk about maybe not feeling like you are in a position of flow or at a given time. Is that how you feel now? Because the energy that I get from you at the moment is that you are bringing a lot into your life and there is a lot of flow and expansion. And I don't know, is that just an outsider's perspective?
Yeah, maybe. look, I think there's a level of what I feel is some wonderful building blocks.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily feel like it's a overly successful or part of my life, but maybe it is a point where I do feel in flow.
Yeah.
But it's about keeping the focus around every step of the way, because sometimes it can feel
overwhelming if you look ahead or, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So I think it's about, and that's what I took out of it and how I'm going to relate it to my month, is what's the next small step that I have to take? What's the next small step, you know?
So tell me about that. Tell me about the month ahead.
Yeah, okay. So I guess that's the thing, is what is that next small step for me? So if I take Ali's advice, what I think it is for me, I've just gone and written a show, a comedy show, Lauren. it's flabby. It is, yes. It's flabby. It's a show, it's there. So maybe the next step is just every day placing 30 minutes in my diary to sit down with a coffee and just refine one small segment of that show. And so by the next time we talk, Lauren, maybe I'll have 5 minutes of content that is, or I feel confident enough to put up onto a stage.
Sure. Or you may find that you sit down to work on a segment, but again, that then your natural inclination is to work generally on the whole piece.
Yeah.
And I mean, who knows? Yeah. I saw a show at UCB the other night, which was of course great. And I was there with a improv comedian from Melbourne who just had a show on at Fringe, and he was talking about how in the past he's always been tempted to do his comedy by sort of having a theme and getting up and trialing it out, and this time he sort of wrote the whole thing out and experimented with that. It's so interesting, and I still find the idea of stand-up comedy so personally confronting. Yeah.
So do I.
if you need me to read any of your drafts or if there's anything I can do, please let me know, but I'll be really interested to see how you go.
And I think that's the next step, right? I really want just to refine 5 minutes so I can get it up, not tell anyone where the hell I'm putting it up, or just go to an open mic night and just test it out, not with friends. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really want that honest opinion of like, not just, oh, you were great. Actually to have that, get up, see how it goes. And there's almost this sense of, well, if it doesn't go that well, that's okay, because you don't know anyone.
Yeah, and you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the small steps. And I think the other piece of that puzzle is the small step around this film that we're talking about. So what is the next step? And that's really sitting down with you, Lauren, and looking at the next step. So there's all these little moments, these building blocks that I feel like my month is going to have that I'm truly excited about.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about your month?
Well, as you know, I'm in rehearsals for Cuckoo at the moment. So that's a production by 15 Minutes from Anywhere that's opening in Melbourne on October 31st. So that's actually, you know, only a few weeks away. And we've got a pretty tight rehearsal schedule leading up to that. And we started before I came away, and it's just been really wonderful working with the cast and the director, Beng Oh, and the writer, Jane Miller, who's also in the room.
How has it been stepping away from the audition process for a short amount of time? Have you found that work has been crystallised and you can think about it a bit more before you get back into rehearsals?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's that thing, you know, so much of the work, you work really hard in rehearsals, and then it's the time in between rehearsals where stuff settles and shifts. And I think I won't really know that till I'm back in the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I might comment on that then. And of course, as you brought up, we are working on a film project at the moment, and I've got a couple of other things that I'm writing that I think I'll have more to talk about in the next few podcasts that are coming for us. But yeah, I certainly feel this trip here has been great, and I'm ready for whatever's coming. Oh, and I should say, completely off topic, that of course in the last month I adopted a little stray kitten from the Lost Dogs home.
Yes. And the name of your little kitten is
Possum.
Cute.
And
hello responsibilities.
A lot of responsibilities, but it's been interesting. I've already noticed that it has had the effect of slowing me down.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm not just thinking about myself, and I have a wonderful furry little creature to cuddle. And I, you know, that might sound a bit silly, but I have actually noticed that it's slowing me down.
Yeah, no, that totally happens.
In what I think is a really healthy, positive way.
There's a lot of responsibilities in owning a pet as well.
Yeah.
That just completely starts to eat up your day. So you've really got to look at your day in a different way.
Okay, well, I got a cat, not a dog, Nick, so let's just settle down there.
Still hard work. On that note.
Anyway, we can probably take the pet conversation off air.
Sure.
So that brings us to the end of podcast 4 for chapter 2 of The Act of Storytelling.
If you've enjoyed it, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you either on Facebook or Twitter at Act of Storytelling, or via email at theactofstorytelling@gmail.com.
Before we move on, I do want to say thank you. We have had some people reach out to us on Facebook just to let us know what they like and that sort of thing. And it is really lovely to hear from people. So, yeah, so thank you.
Yeah, and please, if you get an opportunity, leave us a review on iTunes. And as of this month too, Lauren, you can now catch us on iHeartRadio and Spotify. That's pretty cool.
Woo. Yeah, so big shout out to the Earbuds team who are working really hard and making great things happen. That's what that has come out of.
Yeah.
And remember, you can continue to support us in many ways so we can keep the podcast Good Times happening. On Patreon, for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/theactofstorytelling. You can download our voice map app, which is a GPS tour of the laneways here, through voice map in the App Store, or make a one-off donation through our website, and donations of more than $10 receive a very cool Taos bookmark designed by the wonderful Bethany Smith at theactofstorytelling.com.au.
So, that is the end of the podcast. Continue to join us on The Act of Storytelling.
And thanks for listening.
Earbuds, Melbourne's podcast network. Earbudsnetwork.com.